Welcome to the Catford Speaks, the podcast for the Baseball Prospectus local site covering the White Sox. I very nearly said our old blog name. You can find this podcast on iTunes, where you can subscribe to it regularly, or you can find it on our Blog Talk Radio page. Is that correct, Matt?
That is correct.
So let's get started today. We are doing a podcast on basically the relative eve of the White Sox season. I'm your editor and chief of BP Southside, James Fegan, joining you from Elkhart, Indiana. In
a beautiful toned voice because of your new microphone.
Yes, I got a very nominal bonus at work, and I spent it on this microphone. Joining us...
The envy of the White Sox blogosphere.
My work? Or the microphone?
No, your microphone.
I think others have similar... This is pretty standard. And I just dropped on the floor, so now it's not as good as other Blue Light Yetis. Because it probably has a dent in it. Matt Adams is joining us from Arizona. I still don't know what city you live in.
Chandler.
I'm not going to remember that. Ethan Spaulding, frequent guest, is in Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm only a guest. Why am I only a guest?
Steph writer Ethan Spaulding is in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi. It was cold and rainy today. I really hate Wisconsin.
It was rainy here too, Ethan. But it was very warm, seasonal.
It's cold here in Arizona today.
And somewhat special guest, though he's supposed to be a contributor for us. He's not written anything yet, and he's certainly not getting paid for this. Mark Primiano.
I'll start writing after I'm done retaking my boards exam in a couple weeks.
That sounds like some weak sauce excuses. Manhattan, Kansas is where you're at right now?
Yep, still? For another like 60 days.
Mark is joining us because he's very alone, and... the season starts in less than a week, and we'd figure we'd get to talking about it. What is everyone's like relative expectations for the year at this point?
I don't know. Slight competency.
They're gonna win 97 games. Just kidding. That's not true. But I do actually think that they could conceivably win the division. Division's not that good. If the Royals aren't like way better than Pecota thinks they are, or every projection system thinks they are, if they regress even a little bit, like the Royals are catchable. I don't love the Indians, and I think that VP's projection system, Pecota, which definitely a good projection system, but I think that it has trouble acknowledging the possibility of downside for some of the players on Cleveland, and I think the White Sox pitching staff might be just good enough to make it work.
Yeah, it's the type of situation where they could be good, but if they aren't, there won't be too much disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, utmost, I feel like realistically, they're like an 83-85 win team with potential, obviously, plus or minus in either direction. It doesn't feel like they did quite enough to get them over the hump, but top three team in the division at worst.
I mean, an 83-win team, don't they say standard deviation is something like 7 wins?
Yeah, which just feels ridiculous.
That's a lot.
I think that's a little bit high, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood. It's like, it's high. An 83 true talent win team is going to win 86 games relatively frequently.
It could also, like, win 76.
Right, no, that's how these things work. They go plus or minus generally. Though there are some teams that don't exactly have equivalent downside and upside, and though I think the Sox probably do about. But one thing that has me kind of excited about this team is that like they're not going to be shit offensively. They really aren't. Like the absolute black holes that were there last year.
Like they're not going to be last in the league.
Well, absolutely not last in the league, but like last year they got like, I don't know, like 35% below or 30% below league average production from third base. And this year they're probably going to get 10% above league average production from third base. And last year they got like 40% below league average from second base. And this year they're probably going to get about league average there. And shortstop offensively should be a pretty big upgrade if Rollins can be like, even like a 90, like a 10% below league average. As a whole, Pecota projects the offense to be at a 263 true average, and true average is scaled that 260 is exactly league average. So Pecota projects actually an above league average offense, and even if the defense is going to hurt, and it will hurt, even though I think the outfield defense is going to be much improved with Eaton in a corner and Jackson in the center, but the defense will hurt. But if you get an above league average offense from this team, I think somewhat decent, like there's a pretty strong chance of contention with that.
Oh, I'd be excited even for just league averaged offense last year. Like you look at last year, and other than Abreu and Eaton, no one was even an average hitter, much less above average. The closest you had other than them was Melky, and he was right. Still below average. After that, Avisail Garcia.
Right.
The guy we all hated and wanted gone so badly was the fourth best regular hitter on this team last year.
And this year, I think you're looking at Avisail Garcia was somewhere like, what, 85 or 90 weighted run created plus or something like that? Like,
89 OPS plus, so yeah.
Okay, basically. 89 OPS plus. This year you're looking at, conceivably, Abreu, Eaton, Melky,
Frazier,
Laurie, and maybe even Jackson and Rollins being all better than that. I mean, Jackson and Rollins are not a guarantee by any means, especially not Jackson. But you could conceivably have what was last year the fourth best being the seventh or eighth best position.
Well, that and with Jackson, he makes up for it, whereas you look at last year's roster with all the black holes on offense that couldn't play defense. Jackson at least brings other things to the table. If his bat's still falling off, which it most likely is, he's at least a good center fielder and a competent base runner.
And
he can offset the fact that he's not that great at the plate anymore. Whereas last year he had, like, Avisail Garcia, a walking disaster.
And I think also with that defense, not only do you have him in center, and he has, for his career, basically been... He was, like, well above average in the past, and now he's probably average in center field. But you have Eaton, who... While metrics don't love him in center, I think was a slightly below league average total package center fielder. You have that guy moving to right field where you don't have those guys with that kind of range, and he still has a good arm, and he might really thrive out there, especially compared to Avisail last year. Like, he might be a really good defensive right fielder, and then you're between you're like two-thirds of the outfield is really good defensively between those two guys. You really got two league average center fielders covering those two positions, and then you can kind of deal with the fact that Melky isn't terrible Melky's kind of bad in left instead of last year where you have Eaton having to make up for two absolute statues to his size, and I think that's a huge difference for the outfield defense.
Are we 100% confident in Robin deploying everybody that way? I mean, considering that there's four players available to play the outfield, and that he doesn't just stalwart with a certain setup and not flex it around.
I mean, they're gonna, you know, he's gonna shoehorn Garcia into the outfield more than would be ideal, but at least with the current opening at DH, it does give the excuse that, hey, if you want to try to get Garcia because you still have the belief that that a 25-year-old might turn it around and this could finally be the breakout year, you can at least just stash him at DH because you don't have to pretend, oh, he's okay defensively because he robs a home run once a month. It's what would have been nice to have with Vicieta, where it was just kind of like, nope, the only reason we're holding on to you is the chance your bat might work out. And now we can just throw you at the position where, yeah, by all means, sink or swim. And if he doesn't swim by June, they can just cut bait because it's a year you're supposed to be contending and you can't keep throwing at bats at this guy.
You would think...
You hope, yeah.
I mean, I guess Melky kind of gives an option where a pretty clear line for him to, for Ventura to flex Garcia into the outfield. And I'm kind of pessimistic on Melky's defense going forward to the idea that I don't think it's going to hurt them that much. At least not the way that it hurts, like, the difference between J.B. Shuck and Avisail Garcia's defense.
Right. I think Melky's fine if he's, like, not... like if he's not supposed to be your second best outfielder, like I think he's fine.
Yeah. Like if he's your third outfielder and it's in a corner, you can get away with that as long as the other two are good defensively. You can make up for the fact that Melky Cabrera is Melky Cabrera.
Melky Cabrera was kind of awful against hitting left-handers last year.
If you pull out his first 2 months of the year, though, in general, like, he, like, didn't get a hit against lefty till June or whatever. Like, not that bad, but he was hitting, like, 100, 100, 100. Like,
it was downright Kepinger-esque.
Like, Melky's hard to peg, because I don't know how the hell someone who, and I mean, this kind of is true of Eaton, but not as much because he totally turned it around. But how does a hitter who hit like Melky did for the last 3 months of the year, like basically a league average, above league average hitter, how did he hit so bad for the first 2 months of the year? He had like 3 extra base hits in April and 2 in May. He had like a .050 ISO over that period. Like, how was he that bad? And can we assume he won't have any months that bad? It's really hard for me to peg him as a, like, just as a total package of a player. Like, if you assume those 2 months were so like so outlier that you can just chop him off, like, he was a good offensive player. And but
his first 2 months were like handing your mom the controller to MVP 2005 and going, yeah, just go crazy.
Oh, come on. In MVP 2005, anyone can hit a home run. You just make contact and put the up on the joystick.
But it took you around 2 months to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, he could go wrong. I mean, that's kind of my overlying issue with the roster, is that by kind of cheaping out to the point where you just have a roster spot that you're just going to give the flat Sam from your quad A depth, I just don't really have a lot of insurance if anything really goes wrong with someone Melky, or the catching platoon could fall apart pretty fast.
They have $13 million in insurance, I think.
Until they use it, I can only be like so optimistic about it.
Right, for sure. But they do have that, and they really need to use it, definitely. But
I need to interrupt. Did you guys just see the nightmare fuel the San Francisco Giants Twitter just put out?
Oh, it's Samardzija? Yeah.
Yeah, the like clip art Samardzija shark. Oh my god.
Why?
Of course, we're now talking about this in a medium where people can't see things, but when you listen to this, you guys need to find this. Maybe like a freshman or sophomore in high school's idea of what marketing should look like. It is.
I'm just glad that there's another team that is once again throwing the full weight of their preseason market behind Jeff Samardzija. There's no way that will go wrong.
This is like if the shark from Finding Nemo looked like this scuzzy guy everybody buys weed off of. That's what the clip art looks like.
I try to think that I've like scrubbed a lot of partisanness, if that's a word, out of like my analysis, but I noticed that I'm like different from everyone in the post Cooper Samardzija, just where everyone's like, man, that was a really messed up situation. I hope Shark kills it this year.
Whereas no, I'm like, him. That guy
sucks. I'm saying, it's like, that was a really messed up situation. They really didn't gel at all. I hope he gets shelled.
See, yeah. this is funny because I was totally annoyed with Cubs fans last year that were clearly rooting against Shark. Like, why would you root against Shark? And then, like, now I'm totally in the same place as they were last year. I totally get why they're against Shark. Then again, I don't know.
Like, I didn't want us to get him because I still held a grudge against him drilling Konerko in the face. I still call bullshit on, oh, I didn't mean to hit him. No, you didn't mean to hit him in the face. There's a difference.
From a viewer standpoint, there's basically nothing likable about Samardzija if he's not on your team. And if it was...
And if he's not shoving, because like, the little like, oh man, someone screwed the situation bad walk that he gives after giving up like a huge bomb is like so annoying.
He's like what AJ Pierzynski must have been like for other fan bases, except no, I liked AJ.
But AJ
Pierzynski was like, even the whole time he's on the team, it was like, God, this guy is the worst.
He would hang a splitter to get hit 100 feet, and they look around like, where's Val?
Yeah, AJ
would like do stuff to actively piss off the other team.
He which stepped was, like, on he Casey Blake.
On, God, who's the third base ass he stomped on?
Casey Blake. He's hilarious.
See, that like, that's hilarious. Shark doesn't do that. Shark is just like
Shark is shit. Ben Affleck from Dazed and Confused.
Haven't seen that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what you're going for there.
Seriously?
I mean, that movie was made before Ethan was born. Possibly before his parents met, for all I know. So, Ishikawa or Sans? Pretty good transition.
Jerry Sans, make Hawk happy.
Why do Giants fans love Ishikawa for some reason? And like, really,
he hit a world home run that clinched
the same reason we love Jeff Blum. It's not that hard to understand.
It was the home. Did he hit the home run? No, he didn't hit the home run against the Nationals.
No, he hit it to end the NLCS against the Cardinals, against Mike Wacha, who was like thrown in a ridiculously awful situation.
Mike Wacha was I thought was going to be like a superstar pitcher, and his shoulder is just dead, and he can't throw what he used to. Like, he was like low ceiling prospect turned superstar turned his shine went up, like his star rose so fast and crashed so fast. It's so weird.
I mean, like, he was really bad at the end of last year, but didn't he still have like a statistically okay campaign?
His ERA was good. His like peripherals, he had like a 5 K/9 or something like that. Like, and it looked bad.
Like, yeah, I know watching him, like, he looked bad, but I just remember his 7.6. numbers.
It's not that terrible.
Oh, okay. I remember
it's
was, like...
Good. It's not great or nothing, but I mean...
It was
7.6 K/9, 2.64 K/walk. Like, it was okay.
Everything looked awful at the end of the year, and maybe it's recency bias for me then. Because he actually looked really... He had that one start against the Sox where he looked good. But, I mean, everyone did. But, like, his stuff looked crisp. And then he had the start against the Cubs in the playoffs, and I know Mao was telling me that he was talking to a scout who was just like, yeah, this isn't going to work. Like, he's got nothing anymore. And, well, I hope he comes back, but he, like, that year he went in the playoffs, the year after he was drafted, he was, like, throwing 97 with a Wainwright curveball. It was insane.
Well, just think, the White Sox could have had him instead of Courtney Hopkins.
Well, I would have rather had Kyle Seager, or Corey Seager.
Nope, you get Kyle Seager, who's also good.
I would love Kyle Seager, too.
Courtney Hawkins was a well-reviewed pick at the time.
I know, he did a backflip.
He did a backflip.
So, we briefly touched on Travis Ishikawa versus Jerry Sands, which I think Mark just word vomited Jerry Sands and then kind of moved on from it. It
Don't
seems
me.
Pretty clear that they're going to stick with that. It seems like they're probably... exploring the trade market for a more meaningful upgrade, but as far as like what they're going to do in the next 3 days,
the thing is, this just teams aren't going to be giving up their like that $13 million that they have. There's not really teams that are just going to be giving up their expensive players right now. I think guys like Matt Kemp make sense, but the Padres probably aren't dumping him for nothing right now.
Well, what it does is when the trade deadline gets closer, you'll read less articles about the Sox would trade for so-and-so, but they don't want to pick up the remainder of the contract. You'll hear a little bit less of that, is what my guess is.
I would hope that. Like,
I feel you would hear less of that, but I mean, do you really think we'll hear less of that?
Less, yes, but we'll still hear it, is the unfortunate truth of it.
There aren't many guys... Really, if you look at the next year's free agent crop, unfortunately, there aren't guys on bad teams that are going to be free agents after this year. That would be very appealing. Off the top of my head, guys like Carlos Gomez, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, those are the headliners of next year's free agent class. Those guys aren't, unless something shocking happens, those guys aren't getting moved.
What about Jay Bruce?
They probably need someone who can play first base, is the thing. Like, they need a first baseman. As weird as that sounds, they need a backup first baseman. And
Frazier can swing over there by taking away your awesome third baseman.
Yeah.
Well, then you just move Lowry there and take away your okay second baseman, and that's where we need Carlos Sanchez.
Hasn't Avila played some first base? That's not really a good option, since he probably can't hit 200.
Or, move.
Not as big of an issue at first base.
Well, I'm just thinking, Alex Avila he's going to fall apart by July 17th.
You're not very high on Avila.
Am I supposed to be?
Yeah. But you said something like he's not going to play 30 games this year. I would think that as being a little bit.
I never said that.
Someone else I follow said that, and you're one of those 700 or 800 people. So,
but that's a fear we should all have, right?
Decent chance it was you.
Fear, yeah. But I mean, I don't see anything that makes me think it's going to this experiment's going to end well.
I think it actually can end well in the sense that it's not Tyler Flowers, and I don't think the framing difference will be drastic, and I think at the very least Navarro will be an offensive upgrade.
It can end well, and it will end well. And, I mean, yeah, in 14, Avila was basically a league average hitter, but his last 3 years, you've got 2013, where he put up a 693 OPS. Last year, 626. There's not really much going on there anymore. He's getting older, and he is generally more crippled than most catchers are at this age.
And most catchers are pretty crippled at that age anyway. I really don't know how. Like, I think that the platoon, even with that being said, can be maybe okay, and it should be, but like, what happens if he just is completely done? Like, he's hitting 150 in July.
Well, then you can cut him and bring up Hector Sanchez.
So Travis Ishikawa and Hector Sanchez on the same team? Yeah, we're just using Giants magic, I guess, of the really shitty players. Why don't we just get Buster Posey? Like, and actually someone who's good.
Why don't you get Joaquin Arias?
Tangent on Joaquin Arias. Baseball
would be so... Hey, tangents aren't welcome here, all right? You move it along.
So different if the Rangers in the A-Rod trade had taken Robinson Cano instead of Joaquin Arias as the player to be named later. Like, that's a radical shift in baseball. And that was the two choices they had.
He had the final out, or he, like, had the final assist from third base in the Matt Cain perfect game.
Didn't in the Jonathan Sanchez no-hitter, weren't there no hits allowed or no walks allowed, and the only base runner was a Juan Uribe error?
You're telling me Jonathan Sanchez walked no one?
That's just not
possible. I'm pretty sure he walked like six people in that game.
Yeah, it was like one of the ugliest no-hitters ever.
Yeah, you had to stop yourself because you remember Francisco Liriano, didn't you?
Yeah, that was really bad.
That was... I remember coming into whatever high school class I was in the next day and saying, like, he pitched a shit game. And people were like, no, he pitched a no-hitter. I'm like, no, he pitched a shit game. And
I was at that game.
That game was the worst. Like, one of the worst games I've ever watched.
Yeah. That's the most, like... I've been nervous during games. I never felt like existential dread. Like a horrible, like, embarrassing truth is about to be revealed to the national public.
Sanchez had a perfect game going into the eighth inning, but an error by Juan Uribe allowed the only base runner of the night.
That game was like the White Sox offense getting doxxed.
I told you Jonathan Sanchez had a perfect game, or Juan Uribe messed up the Jonathan Sanchez perfect game.
I still can't believe it.
I don't want to believe it. I would never believe anything untowards about Juan Uribe.
Juan Uribe just knew that it wasn't right and like
took things into his own hands. Juan Uribe saved us from oblivion, because I'm pretty sure if Jonathan Sanchez throws a perfect game, we're all dead.
It's like baseball's legacy can't survive.
Is that why Jim Joyce made it so Andrés Galarraga couldn't throw a perfect game?
Where was all this help for Phillip Humber?
Phillip Humber was a top five draft pick. It's okay.
And he was really good but he was a quality back-end pitcher for an entire year. And then the perfect game happened, and he was just dead.
I still get mad because out here in Kansas, I could not watch that perfect game until the last inning.
Yeah, it was a Fox game, yeah.
Didn't miss much. He was pitching great.
Had to watch Red Sox-Yankees.
The nice thing about recent baseball is the Red Sox, and other than 2013, is the Red Sox and Yankees have combined to be pretty fucking bad. Like,
I mean, the Yankees went to the playoffs last year.
Those teams have been like either near or below 500 for most of the past few years.
The Yankees squeezed a lot of value out of 40-year-olds to go to the playoffs last year.
Travis Ishikawa versus Jerry Sands.
Well, I don't want to talk about this.
We're at least talking about baseball now.
Fine.
I kind of need you guys and listeners eventually to go to the Wikipedia page for a list of Major League Baseball perfect games. Because the picture that it chooses is apparently of Lee Richmond, the man who threw the first perfect game. And he looks ridiculous.
Oh, that's a hell of a shirt there.
Oh, God. I didn't know that was in style back then.
Like, he looks like...
With that hat?
He looks like he belongs in the Warriors, the Enclave scene, and there's all the ridiculous gangsters in their silly-ass costumes.
I don't get that movie reference.
You don't get any movie reference. You have Netflix. Fix this.
Netflix doesn't have good movies.
It has The Warriors.
What is The Warriors?
Oh my God.
I've never even heard of that movie.
I even played The Warriors video game.
It was a good game.
It was. You could kick people off of roofs all the time.
Yeah, that was a surprisingly great game. You threw a guy in a wheelchair under a train.
What are you talking about?
You could crack a bottle over someone's head, and then it's a knife that you have.
Yeah, it was fantastic. That game was amazing.
Sounds like the precursor to Grand Theft Auto.
It was made by the same people.
Oh no, the White Sox released Michael The White Sox had Michael Clato?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When? Like, didn't they... Wasn't he gone for a bit?
Yeah. I mean, no one really hung on to him.
I'm more upset to learn that we released the guy that played Herc in The Wire.
Steve Lombardozzi?
Yeah.
We also lost Scott Hairston.
Yeah, remember, like, how boring that part of the offseason was where we were writing about Scott Harrison's minor league deal?
Yeah, we actually wrote that up, didn't we?
Yeah.
You guys are sad.
Well, sorry I couldn't, you know, do whatever you did, jerk.
Blood work on a hyena?
Yeah. Pretty boring stuff to do with a hyena.
Yeah. I also did anesthesia on it. It was really cool.
That doesn't sound fun. Oh, I get to play with a hyena. What do I want to do? Make it go to sleep against its will?
Yeah. Shoot it with a dart gun, make it go to sleep? So who?
So, Travis Ishikawa versus Jerry Sands.
Fuck both of them.
I'm sorry, the right answer is James Loney.
Yeah, what he would help.
He's an improvement over those two, because like Ethan said earlier, at least at some point he was a major leaguer.
Yeah, like Travis Ishikawa has never been a major league level player, and Jerry Sands like had that week in Cleveland where everyone loved him, and then like 2 weeks later they DFA'd him.
Hawk Harrelson has always loved Jerry Sands.
Was Jerry Sands the Mickey Mantle comp he put?
I think so.
Yeah.
Back when he was with the Dodgers, yeah.
Yeah.
He had some absurd comp for him, and it was just like, are you serious?
I really appreciate that Jason Benetti is going to be doing half of the games. I think, and actually, I think it'll make Hawk more pleasant. Or not.
Absolutely. The worst thing about Hawk is listening to him say the exact same thing 160 games over and over and over again. So, yeah.
And when you would have someone that would replace him, and it would be like, all right, and here's Mike Huff. And it was like, seriously? you can't do better. Like, Aaron Rowand was all right. The three or four games a year, they're like, yeah, come be here, Aaron Rowand. It's like,
Especially because Aaron Rowand, the games where Aaron Rowand was replacing Steve Stone, I could not imagine being just a random guy thrown into broadcasting, like never doing it before, and having to work with Hawk. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't really give you room. Like, one of the most amazing things about Benetti, like when we're listening to him this spring, is that like you remember, like, oh, holy shit, Steve Stone knows a lot about baseball and is a really smart baseball mind. Even though he has some weird baseball opinions, he's still like a really smart baseball mind. But when he's with Hawk, he just doesn't even try, because there's no point in trying.
Yeah, we got a good glimpse into that last year with Swirsky.
And Swirsky's not a good baseball broadcaster, in my opinion. Like,
well, he let Steve Stone talk though, and that was
right. Exactly. Like it just shows how good Stone is, and like, listening to Stone and Benetti talk was, like, really refreshing. Like, I legitimately enjoyed it.
And they even weaved in some advanced metrics talk without following up with some tirade about how terrible it is.
That, too. And, like, I don't need my broadcasters to do advanced metrics, because they probably don't know it well. They're not stat guys. And a lot of times the people who, like, try and force it end up being, like, they're worse than the guys who don't even try sometimes, I think, but because they don't understand what they're talking about, but they talk about it anyway. But they did it in a way that it was like they kind of just presented it, and they're like, this is what this says, They didn't try and make any bogus analysis, and I liked it. I appreciated it.
Yeah, if you start small, they can learn with the rest. I mean, because most of the people watching don't know either, so it's fine. As long as they're not spouting incorrect things.
I don't think Jason Benetti and Steve Stone are going to write an R script for the next defensive metric. I don't think that we'll ever hear Steve Stone explain the with or without you methodology that was used in catcher framing, or the statistical theory of mixed models that is used in many of our great baseball prospectus stats done by Jonathan Judge on here.
Yeah, but the more they try with advanced stats, the less we have to hear about, oh, this guy was bad because he didn't have enough RBIs last year. You know, that'll at least take the place of that.
One of the funny things about Quintana is hearing Hawk like, you know, I still like wins, but Jose Quintana doesn't get wins and he's still good. Like, I don't even, the logical inconsistency with how much he likes Quintana and how much he likes wins as a stat doesn't even make sense.
There's a whole lot of logical inconsistencies with Hawk on a daily basis.
Also, like, the things like, first rule of baseball is you got to catch the ball. That's just, I don't get why he says that. Like, what does that mean? The first rule of baseball is you got to catch the ball?
I think that's post-2013.
Wait, but why is that? Why is it the first
rule? I would also like to say I figured out why Hawk loved Jerry Sands so much. Well, Sands' first major league home run was off of Mark Burley.
That would explain it.
Can you never make that noise again?
You work with animals in pain all day long, and that noise bothers you?
I thought it was me saying, ah.
It was weird.
So, Jerry Sands versus Chancey.
I don't want to talk about that anymore. They're both bad.
I hope that's like what James says to me at my wedding. When like I go up to be like, hey, thanks for coming. He's just like, so, Jerry Sands or Stars?
Wasn't there Jerry Sands, or someone said, I don't remember if it was this year or last year, that Jose Abreu might play third? It must have been last year, during interleague play.
Yeah, he was taking grounders pregame, and I don't know if... I think Merck had said it, that he was doing it, but I think he was also doing it to rile up Twitter on purpose.
Twitter is...
Jose Abreu was?
Yeah, he was pregame, he was taking grounders at third base. I think it was at Wrigley, right?
Oh, it was, yeah.
Because they were trying to fit Adam LaRoche into the lineup? That was some fun times to look back on.
Wait, Adam LaRoche, now that we're not, like talking about his kid anymore or whatever... He was so fucking bad, and I'm really glad he's off the team.
He was a 94 weighted runs created versus right-handers last year. Loney was 97.
Was he like a 1 against lefties, though?
He was a... Loris was a -1 versus lefties, whereas Loney was merely unplayable.
That was Leary Garcia for a whole year. He was a -1, I think.
But they knew coming in he shouldn't hit against lefties. Or they should have. He'd been bad the last two seasons.
Yeah, but who would then? Fucking Gordon Beck. Yo, guys, we're so close to making it to the first opening day in, what, 7 years without Gordon Beckham on the roster? Like,
you got time to swing a deal.
Unless something happens in the next 2 days.
Bring him home.
To opening day without Gordon Beckham. On the White Sox roster.
The White Sox called him up the night I turned 21. And I distinctly remember being in the bar in Champaign and looking at the TV and just being like, yes, Gordon Beckham's coming up tomorrow. This is a new era in White Sox baseball. Because I was stupid as hell.
Hey, I went around telling everybody how great Gordon Beckham was going to be as well.
You trade for him. You can play him at third. You can move Frazier over. And you can have a backup first baseman for Jose Abreu. Problem solved. Roster fixed.
I'm pretty sure that Gordon Beckham got, like, not crazy people comparing him to, like, Chase Utley and, like, Robin Yount. Like, or Paul Molitor.
He got Petroia was a big comp.
Like, he was supposed to
white second baseman?
That
yeah. Michael Young was there for white second baseman, too.
Steve Sachs, who was also white and played second base.
Oh, yeah, he definitely got Michael Young comps. But, like, he was... But Michael Young was a shortstop, wasn't he?
Young was a shortstop and so, third base.
So was Gordon Beckham.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gordon was a Gordon Beckham was a third baseman at first, and then he switched to second base.
Yeah. There were some weird parts of his development. Like the him spending like around 7 hours in the White Sox minor league system total.
More than Chris Sale, Carlos Rodon, and Carson Fulmer will spend combined when it's all said and done. Oh, we can talk about Carson Fulmer. That's something we could actually talk about.
He looks a little not ready yet.
Yeah, he's still a kid. He's 2 years older than me, but still a kid.
Time will catch up to you, Ethan, you bastard.
There's not much projection left on Ethan.
Physicality, probably not. But I got room to grow with the mental factor, I think. I'm still learning. Still learning the game.
It sounds like something we say about, like, Tim Anderson. Not you.
Hey, if I'm so raw, I might as well just, like, pick up a baseball bat, and it'll all come together eventually.
Did you see what our friend RJ Anderson put in his season predictions for CBS?
No.
He picked AL Rookie of the Year, Tim Anderson.
Huh.
That's bold.
Yeah, not...
I don't see a world where that happens.
I mean, if it did for some reason happen, I'd be elated, but I would also probably lose all my hair with anxiety when he was first called up.
Absolutely, and I don't see him being ready enough to be up early enough. Like, if he is called up early enough, it'll get enough plate appearances to win the Rookie of the Year. I'd be terrified. Yeah, like you said, I'd be terrified with anxiety. I just think he's gonna bomb. I don't think we could possibly see 400 plate appearances of good enough to win Rookie of the Year. Tim Anderson.
I feel like it involves heartbreaking, career-ending Jimmy Rollins injury to have that happen.
Jimmy
like
Rollins
blown as Achilles or something.
That actually would break my heart. I love Jimmy Rollins.
There's no reason not to like Jimmy Rollins, really. He gave a really weird nickname to Saladino?
Emanski.
What is that a reference to?
Oh my god, Ethan, really?
What is it a reference to?
How are you a person?
What is it a reference to?
Tom Emanski used to have these, like...
horrid infomercials.
Baseball-like fundamental videos.
And they had Fred McGriff in them in this god-awful hat, and he would do this very stilted, like, finger gun point at you.
It was a video for, like, baseball fundamentals to teach to your kids, and it's, like, all these, like, freakish AAU kids, like, doing these drills, and it was by Tom Emanski. So he's calling him fundamental.
Calling
him Emanski.
So he's saying he's not very good.
I mean,
I don't think it's fundamental, like, basic.
He's, like, not very tool. It's, like, the compliment you get to the non-toolsy guy.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, everyone, like, how everyone calls, like, Avisel Garcia when they talk to him. I was like, he's so strong. He's so big. Or, like, you know, ignoring the fact
he can't
do anything.
He's so fast for a guy that size.
Yeah, like, no one ever talks about, like, a skill that he has. Like, oh, he gets the bat head out, like, really well. Like,
he gets down the first baseline really well. That is his, like, specific skill. He can run in a straight line for 90 feet.
He'd be really scary if he were running at you. Like, if the old catcher rules were allowed and he were charging down the baseline, he could generate a lot of momentum, mass times velocity. He could be scary.
He's probably better suited as a fullback who slips out for passes in the flat. But even then, his route running would be kind of weird. Is there a baseball player who would be more useful to the Bears than Avisel Garcia? I say no.
Probably Mike Trout.
I meant a White Sox player, obviously.
You said baseball player. Live with it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about what I meant.
Well...
Josh Fields played college football. He would have been great.
You've been garbage.
Adam Dunn was a quarterback.
So was Josh Fields.
So was Joe Borch.
Josh Fields was a college quarterback at freaking Oklahoma State.
Before they were any good.
He was there, like, right when they started getting good.
Yeah, like, benching them was the sentimental moment in their development.
Fine, let's go get Todd Helton. He was a quarterback in college.
You need some time to dry out.
Well, I don't think we want a quarterback for the Bears right now. Like, at least Avisel could do something with the Bears. I don't know. I actually don't know what I'm saying. But we should probably get in someone other than a quarterback for the Bears.
Josh Fields led Oklahoma State to a 9-4 record in 2003 and a Cotton Bowl appearance. That's pretty good.
Appearance means they lost, doesn't it?
It does mean they lost. They lost to Mississippi. I gauge a winning record. If your season starts with a 9, that's a great season.
My sophomore year in college, they handed out towels that said 9-3 isn't good enough.
Josh Fields hit the grand slam in the Burley perfect game.
That he did.
Josh Fields caught the last out in the Burley perfect game.
That he also did.
Is the current backup first base situation better than backup first baseman Josh Fields in 2009?
Yes. If your backup first baseman is currently Todd Frazier, yes.
No, it's Travis Howard, Jerry Sands.
So they play the A's next week. That should be fun.
Sonny Gray.
We have an A's preview podcast. We really shouldn't wade into this.
Chris Sale's better than Sonny Gray.
He's better than most.
Better than everyone but Kershaw.
Who's the competition for that?
For the second best pitcher in baseball?
Yeah.
It's Cubs fans might get mad if you say Sale's better than Arrieta, but he definitively is. And then it's I really don't. If you go by most projection systems go Kershaw by a mile and then Sale a little bit over Scherzer. And I still wonder, Scherzer struck out, 275 batters last year? Or 280 batters last year, more than Sale? And I really wonder how many batters Sale strikes out if he got to face a pitcher every ninth at bat.
Probably a lot, because he'd be a merciless jerk about it.
He would, throw sliders that
would
look
just be sliders, yeah. Nothing but sliders.
He would throw. The only non-sliders would be, inside heat that's breaking towards the pitcher.
And then just the one random changeup all season to a pitcher.
Someone did a Markov chain modeling of pitchers pitching. And Markov chain, for a little bit of a stochastic processes lecture right here, Markov chains are basically the assumption that the next event can be predicted if you only know the previous event and nothing else, effectively. And someone did modeling for pitchers for pitch sequencing, and Sale, after every time Sale throws a changeup, he's a lot more likely to throw a changeup than he is in other situations. He doubles up on changeups statistically significant amount difference between how much he throws changeups after changeups versus after fastballs. It's weird.
He's a weird dude.
This is probably we've had podcasts that are just oh yeah, this is terrible, like as a joke. This one's probably really bad.
Really? I mean, I'm happy you guys let me keep doing these, but they always go terribly when I'm involved.
They don't, usually.
This one is just we don't have much to talk about, and no one wants to talk about the things that we could talk about.
Because what we could talk about is terrible.
We just need a damn season to start.
Yeah.
We should get Freddie Gibbs to come on a podcast.
Oh, yeah, because he's totally going to tolerate this shit.
Yeah, don't give him a sample to listen to.
Just lie. Just do what I do. It's great.
Send him the clip of you singing, and then we'll see if he'll join.
We only make the highlights. Right?
No.